Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me. Every Saturday, I am here live from noon to 2 Pacific time. And I believe the show is rerun from 10 to 12 on Sundays. So if you miss it on Saturday, you can catch it at ihubradio.com online. You can call in if you want to join the conversation. Let us know how you feel about the election, positive or negative. 760-544-8255. 760-544-8255. Or you can text 760-699-0202. Obviously, the news of the day is that Joseph Biden has been declared to be the president-elect of the United States. He will be the 46th president of this country. And the current president, the 45th, Donald Trump, is still coming from the perspective that it ain't over till it's over, and he doesn't think it's over until all his lawsuits get adjudicated, including that a lot of Republicans are advising behind the scenes that he needs to calm down. Can you imagine what he must have been like stalking around the White House after all of this has been going on since Election Day, let alone today? He was furious at Fox News because Fox News called Arizona for Biden. And they were the only ones who did call Arizona. And I believe Arizona is still hanging out there because they haven't finished counting all the late ballots. But what does Joe Biden face when he becomes president? Because it appears that control of the Senate may come down to these two rerun races in Georgia, runoff elections, which won't be decided till January anyway. And if Democrats win both of those, they may end up with a 50-50 split in the Senate, which actually would benefit Biden, because when the Senate vote is tied, guess who breaks the tie? The person who is considered the president of the Senate, the vice president of the United States. So that means if it is 50-50, assuming that both Georgia seats can be won by the Democrats in this runoff, then if it came to 50-50, Kamala Harris could make the difference. But I got to tell you, it's unlikely. Unlikely, not impossible. So meanwhile, the Republicans are already starting to think about, well, how do we obstruct Biden as president? And the likely answer is more than any of us can imagine right now. They can block all significant legislation. Because if it doesn't pass the House and the Senate, it can't get to the president's desk to be signed. They can launch endless investigations of one thing or another, which they claim the Democrats have been doing to Trump ever since he got in. They could refuse. Now, get this. As good as you may feel right now about the fact that Biden is the president-elect, a Republican-controlled Senate could refuse to allow Biden to fill any judicial vacancy or to appoint cabinet members, because all cabinet members have to be approved by the Senate. Now, as it turns out, if the Republicans decide to obstruct Biden at every turn, that could actually be a benefit to Biden. And here's why. Only nine times in the history of this country has the Senate rejected a nominee for a cabinet position. Only 9 times. And only once in the last 60 years. And for those of you who are old enough to remember, there was a guy named John Tower. He had been a senator, John Tower, and he was put up for Secretary of Defense. But he was known as a heavy drinker. A very heavy drinker. He wanted to be Secretary of Defense so badly, he promised he would never touch another drop of alcohol. But nevertheless, he was turned down for that position. He could not get the Senate at the time to approve. But that's the only time in the last 60 years that the Senate has rejected a president's nominee for a cabinet position. Now, it's true, the Republicans may feel that some of the people that Biden wants to put up for cabinet positions are too liberal. They're too much on the left. They may be in a position to try and influence or force Biden to choose more centrist candidates for these positions. And Biden has already said he's going to have an extremely diverse cabinet, and he is going to consider some Republicans to serve in his cabinet, which is the way it's been done by Democratic presidents, at least, for a long time. They've almost always had at least one cabinet member who was a moderate Republican. Now, the truth is, cabinet choices used to be confirmed without much regard to what they were thinking, as long as they were reasonably qualified and not full of scandal like John Tower had been. However, if they don't like the direction that Biden is going with his cabinet, Biden can say, hey, confirm my picks, or I'm going to use the Vacancies Act to fill those positions, and you'll have nothing to say about it, because there is this thing called the Vacancies Act, which allows a president to fill positions that need to be filled without approval from the Senate. Now, the president can, with the cooperation of the Speaker of the House, forget about the Senate, but with the cooperation of the Speaker of the House, the president can declare Congress in recess. And then he can make what are known as recess appointments. And in fact, at various times, either Republicans or Democrats have found a way to keep from recessing, even when they're all supposed to be on vacation or campaigning. They keep the session going, and at least one person has to show up, and then the president can't make recess appointments. But if we have Democrat-controlled House with the Speaker of the House named by the Democrats, possibly Nancy Pelosi yet again, then they can, in fact, declare that Congress is in recess and make recess appointments that don't require Senate approval. Now, the fact that a President Biden could play that kind of hardball means that maybe he can convince a Republican Senate that it's not worth playing hardball, that things need to be a little more orderly. But McConnell already has some plans to prevent Biden from stacking his cabinet with people who are too liberal. People like, for example, Susan Rice, who has been hinted at to head up the State Department. Stacey Abrams, the powerhouse woman from Georgia, has been talked about as possibly an option for attorney general. Both Susan Rice and Stacey Abrams are pretty liberal, and it is possible that McConnell may want to try and negotiate with a President Biden to make appointments that are a little more moderate in return for the Senate not giving him any trouble. There is a source close to McConnell who has said that the Republican Senate would work with Biden on centrist nominees, but no radical progressives, however they want to define that. I assume it means anybody who doesn't agree with them. Meanwhile, as a result of the election, healthcare stocks have skyrocketed because the idea that Republicans are going to maintain control of the Senate means we will continue to have gridlock, which means health insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, medical device firms, their stock is going crazy because it is presumed that there won't be much headway made with providing medical care to a much larger number of Americans. A Republican Senate would mean that the public option and direct government negotiation on drug prices might be dead for at least the next 2 years until we have another election and more senators would be up for the possibility of being replaced on the Republican side. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court is about to hear a case that could invalidate the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, and hospitals could be very affected because millions would lose coverage under Medicaid and individual health coverage, and there would then be a whole lot more uncompensated care dumped on hospitals. Well, we'll see how much the Republicans want to play that kind of hardball. There are agencies in the federal government that are going to need all kinds of reversals of Trump policies if Biden ends up sitting in that chair, which it now looks more and more reality that he will. A woman named Seema Verna, director of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, has taken every possible step you can imagine to cripple our premier public health programs. She's the one who promoted work requirements for Medicaid recipients, despite all kinds of evidence that that forced people off Medicaid and did nothing to really help them find jobs or improve their health. The environmental protection guy who was installed is a corporate lobbyist who made a career of attacking the Endangered Species Act for his clients. And he's been accused of involving himself in efforts to loosen environmental restrictions on water flows for California farmers. EPA, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Andrew Wheeler, Transportation Secretary Elaine Cho, who happens to be married to Mitch McConnell, they're leading efforts to roll back the auto emission standards and try and keep California from being able to set tight standards for automobile emissions, which have meant that Detroit and other car manufacturers have in fact made their cars better. All that kind of stuff is going to have to be looked into and redone under a Biden administration. And the president still has over 2 months to do as much mischief as he can.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
So the one thing we have not talked about yet today is the coronavirus. And in spite of the fact that the president said, as soon as the election's over, that's going to disappear. I wish. The United States recorded more than 100,000 new virus cases yesterday for the first time. More than 100,000 new cases yesterday. The country's supply of protective gear, particularly the good face masks, is being strained again, and the president has never used that Defense Authorization Act to make sure that we had enough to go into a brand new surge with appropriate protective gear. New coronavirus infections surged by about 20% in the last week. Hospitalizations are on the rise. So it's not just, oh, we test so much that we have more cases. That is just bull. Hospitalizations are what tell you that you have more cases. And hospitals all over the country, especially in states that overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump, go figure. Hospitals are running out of beds. We are now conducting more than 1 million tests a day, a 5% increase over the previous week. But that doesn't explain the much larger surge in cases. Yesterday, the United States registered more than 121,000 new cases. 23 states have recorded more cases in the past week than in any other 7-day period. The head of the public health agency in the state of Wisconsin resigned. Wisconsin is ravaged with the virus. In Texas, in spite of the affirmations we keep getting from President Trump about how kids have some kind of built-in immunity, in Texas yesterday, a kindergartner died as a result of coronavirus. You want some perspective? It took us 2 months to register the first 200,000 cases. 2 months. Now we've done it in 2 days. Biden's first act has already been announced. As president-elect, on Monday, he's going to be naming a 12-member task force to combat and contain the spread of the virus. He is making the coronavirus his first immediate priority. The task force is going to be led by three co-chairs: the former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, former Food and Drug Administration Commissioner, David Kessler, and a doctor from Yale University, Dr. Marcella Nunez-Smith. In Europe, they are experiencing the second surge. We keep saying, oh, well, we're in our third surge. No, we're not. We never got control of this virus. The first surge started at zero in January and went up. We managed to control it a little bit, but from a new plateau, it went up again. And then we started to bring it down again a little bit. And now from that new plateau, it has gone up yet again. We're still in the first surge of this virus. We have never controlled it to the extent we needed to. We now have roughly 9.9 million people across this nation who have been infected, and we're nearing 250,000 Americans dead from this virus. Oh, the president says, well, no matter what condition people had, doctors are making more money by saying they died of the virus. First of all, that is a disgusting thing to say. And second of all, I will just remind you, if you have heart trouble and you get the virus, If you have COPD early stages and you get the virus, if you have diabetes or you're obese and you get the virus and you die, you're not dying from the fact that you had diabetes or heart disease, because if you hadn't gotten the virus, you'd still be alive with that condition. All over Europe, they're cracking down again, and we're going to have to get to the point where we're willing to do that as well. We can't afford to lose any more people. This is obscene that we are nearing 250,000 dead Americans. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. That wasn't good news.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, what can Trump do over the next 2 months that he's still in office and before the inauguration of our new 46th president, Joe Biden? And doesn't that make me smile? There's a lot the president can do. And he will still be in office. And forget about all the lawsuits. He's got all kinds of lawyers, and they're going to do whatever they're going to do, and it's not going to work. I'm just telling you up front, it's not going to work. But after this defeat, there are no constraints on the ordinary powers that he has as president. Between the election and the inauguration of a new president, Donald Trump is still president with all of the presidential powers that come with that, including, for example, executive clemency. He can pardon people. He can commute sentences. He can give reprieves on anything that has to do with federal law, not state law. So here's the... I mean, he can even pardon himself, technically, we think. And who's going to make, you know, a federal case out of that? It would be a federal case. But if he decided to pardon himself, or if he decided to resign from office the day before his term is up, and all of a sudden Mike Pence would become the acting president and Mike Pence would pardon Trump. I don't think he'd do that, because he has his own political aspirations in the future. But nevertheless, president can pardon everybody and ultimately pardon himself for any federal crimes. State of New York, in two different jurisdictions, is still looking at Donald Trump for possible crimes, especially financial crimes, for which he can still not only be investigated, but prosecuted. He can't pardon himself for state crimes. Now, presidents can convert political appointees to career employees, making it harder to get rid of them. You know, the president has, I mentioned this last week, he's trying to convert career employees into political appointees so that he can fire them without them having to go through civil service protections. However, he does have political appointees in almost every agency, and he can convert them to career employees so that the new administration coming in cannot easily fire them. He can make recess appointments, so that people he names to positions that are open are people who the Biden administration would inherit. And let me just give you an example. I don't know if you've ever worked in a corporation, but let's say you worked in a corporation where you were manager. You were hired as manager of a department with, 150 employees. 75 employees, a fairly decent-sized small office in a big corporation, and you were hired as manager. You come in as manager. How long is it going to take you to figure out which of the people who work there right now, who you're inheriting, were put in those positions by the guy you took over from and who still have loyalty to the guy you took over from? And how are you going to root them out? That's what the president can do over this next 2 months to make it more difficult for the Biden administration to be able to do what they need to do once they get in. Also, outgoing presidents often rush to finalize rules, to enact laws that have already been passed by Congress that have not yet been put into full usage in various departments. Trump has already moved to demote the Republican head of a U.S. energy regulation panel, a guy who was an aide to Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, need I mention coal-producing Kentucky. But this guy came forward with an idea to promote the use of carbon markets to put a curb on climate change. In other words, and this idea has been floated around for a long time, make people pay for the use of carbon, or make them pay for how much they're putting out into the environment. And this guy came up with the idea that this would be a good thing to do for the environment. Donald Trump's already demoted him. He's rolling back bedrock environmental law, and he will accelerate that as much as he can. Changes to the 1970 National Environmental Policy Act mandates environmental reviews of major construction projects and pipelines. Trump administration wants to cut all those regulations. 50-year-old protections in minority communities where polluting industries disproportionately are located. You have land next to a big electric producing power plant that has environmental impact. Well, the surrounding property, nobody with money wants to live there. That's where they build cheap housing. Guess who lives in cheap housing? Mostly minorities and those without much money, working class people. They are more subjected to those environmental problems. President wants to get rid of this 50-year-old protection. Joe Biden, on the other hand, released a $2 trillion plan aimed at combating climate change, spurring economic growth, and overhauling the energy industry, particularly with a view toward protecting environmental injustice. Look, I've been predicting for a long time that when he leaves office, Donald Trump's going to start his own media empire. OAN, which is this far-right supposedly radio station, which I believe was originally started by Russians. OAN is ripe for the picking, and the president is not happy with Fox because, my God, they actually have real news people on Fox during the day who are willing to criticize the president. How dare they? That was supposed to be his network. Well, he's going to want his own network, and he will start one. And he's got an 88 million following on Twitter, which gives him a bullhorn to be an influential voice on the right. And to some extent, there is concern, even among Republicans, that if Donald Trump can have a big enough bullhorn, and a big enough platform on which to be heard as the influential voice of the Republican Party, at least for now, he can run again in 2024 because he has not served two terms. Presidents are limited to two terms in office. Trump is one of the very few one-term presidents. That means he could run again in 2024. So if he can influence the Republicans to deny a President Biden from making the kinds of changes that Biden wants to make, and by holding down the ability to put the kind of stimulus into the economy that means we truly do build the economy back. Yes, we did add over 600,000 jobs last month, a very good return, although it means that those who are only working part-time and want full-time jobs, or those who are working the gig economy and would like to have real jobs, are not counted as unemployed. Now, China, interestingly enough, has revived its economy very rapidly because they shut down almost all economic activity as a result of the virus. In April, when they had really flattened their curve, they got factories revved up again and allowed exports to start increasing. So they were putting out products they could send out of the country. And in the third quarter, with the virus almost stamped out in China, they began encouraging consumers to go out and open their wallets and start to get involved in the economy again. Well, we did not follow a model that allowed us to get the virus under control enough to be able to, in fact, reopen the economy safely. So in places where people are saying, well, I'm not going to wear a mask, my freedoms are being curtailed, those selfish bastards are making it almost impossible for the rest of us to be able to get back to normal. And they don't seem to care. And quite honestly, the president doesn't care. These are realities that Joe Biden, as president, is going to have to deal with. And over this next couple of months, the president is in a position, the current president, to make things as difficult as possible for when Biden comes in. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but we're not done with him yet. A friend of mine named Jason Hull wrote this. He said this was an election night observation. It has been said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and thinking you'll get a different result. I reflect upon this on election night as I watch many of the same states that have historically voted Republican voting Republican again. These are the states that have for decades had the highest poverty levels, the lowest education levels, the highest illiteracy, the highest rates of domestic violence, the largest numbers of people on government assistance, the lowest wages, and the highest teen pregnancy rates. Yet they continue to support the party that has failed them time and again to deliver them from these horrible circumstances. The fact that they have historically voted and continue to vote against their own self-interest demonstrates a dire lack of critical thinking skills among the largest portion of the general voting populace in those states. And it is precisely that upon which the oppressive party they support is counting. I find this beyond sad, beyond pathetic. It is tragic. And that is where we still are.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay. I'm going to, in this last segment, get to some of the kinds of stories I just love because they're actually pretty good news. And I didn't mean to bum you out on a day when we should all feel good about the fact that we're going to have a new president. But there are realities that we also have to be aware of. You know, I'm often called a Pollyanna because I tend to hold very optimistic views, but I'm also a realist. I think it's important. In fact, I'll share with you the secret to my life. This is the secret to the way I live my life. Every time anything comes up, I ask myself, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? The very worst thing. And once I envision the very worst thing that could happen, I know I'm prepared to handle it in case it happens. Because the truth is, the very worst thing almost never happens. But if you're prepared for the very worst thing, you can handle whatever happens. And in that sense, I am an optimist. But I'm a realist. I want to know what's the worst thing that could happen. I want to know how things could go wrong so that I can be prepared to cope with it and do something about it. But then there are those totally ridiculous things that I find in the news that just make me roll my eyes. And this is one of those kinds of stories that I just love. The insanity. In New York City, there are these online message boards where police officers go in secret to complain about their jobs. And we have these all over the country. And occasionally we find out that some police have been going on these message boards and putting up just really horrendous racist crap. Well, this one just tickled my fancy. On this message board in New York City, where police officers go to complain about their jobs, a user who called himself Clouseau, as in Inspector Clouseau posted hundreds of racist messages. City investigators linked the account. Now, seriously, open your mind for this. They linked the account to a high-ranking New York Police Department official responsible for preventing workplace harassment. Hello? How insane can it get? I have a piece of good news that jumped out at me this past week with regard to the election. I don't know if you saw this incredible picture of this woman, but a young Navajo woman wanted to make sure that other Navajos from her community would get to the polls. So she led a whole group of Navajos from her area on horseback to the polls. She said, "We rode in honor of our ancestors who fought for our right to vote. We rode in honor of our ancestors who rode longer miles and hours just to exercise their right to vote for us, our people, our lands, Mother Earth and Father Sky, and future generations." 15 members of the Navajo Nation rode 10 miles to the nearest polling site. It was the first of three such events so that they would be sure that they honored their ancestors and went to vote. And I want to acknowledge that all of my children and grandchildren voted. I never ask them who they're voting for. I just make sure they get to the polls. But my youngest granddaughter voted the way I would have hoped she did. and sent me an absolutely wonderful message after I said, I hope you voted, and I hope you remember you were born into a Democratic family that believed in union rights and supported working class people. And she sent back an absolutely wonderful message saying, I know, and yes, I did. Now, here's a great piece of good news that I want to share with you. There was a horrible, horrible earthquake in Turkey this past week. Monitoring agencies have rated it somewhere between 6.4 and 7 on the Richter scale. That's a pretty serious earthquake, and the state of a lot of architecture in that area of Turkey was not very good, and so the pictures of just total piles of rubble were frightening. But this past week, a three-year-old girl was pulled alive from that rubble after 91 hours of having been lodged in a space next to a dishwasher. 91 hours. That is days that this poor little three-year-old girl was stuck there by herself. And when they pulled her out, she was actually in good health. She was the 107th person rescued since the earthquake struck. Death toll of 105, and two other children were saved from two separate buildings. But this three-year-old, after 91 hours, that's a story that makes me believe that it is worth being an optimist and hoping for the best, no matter what. I started reading last week a piece about how the blue states would leave the red states because the blue states have all the really good stuff going on anyway, and of course California is one of the blue states. The final thing about that reading, and it is way too long to go into now, but it says with the blue states unified, we will have firm control of about 80% of the country's fresh water, more than 90% of the pineapple and lettuce, 92% of the nation's fresh fruit, 95% of America's quality wines. Oh, you can have all the new COVID cases since you're too self-centered to wear masks, you red state people. We are the people of the blue states. This is a day to feel hopeful as we look to the future with a new president and an amazing history-making vice president. And I will leave you with the words of Albert Einstein, words that are worth holding close. I would rather be an optimist and a fool than a pessimist and right. Have a good week. Rejoice in the fact that we are always moving forward.